We promised you a super vent day on this Wednesday, and this is the time. Every Wednesday, we put a couple of topics on the table and invite our listeners to join us either by phone or by email to vent politely on those topics. This week's topics, lessons learned from the federal government shutdown and voter registration choices and what they get you individually. Our phone number is for the exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. We're calling it Super Vents Day because with the pledge drive going on, we'd have to have a short guest segment and a short Vents Day. This way, we just have a Super Vents Day. So join us again to talk about lessons learned from the shutdown and or voter registration choices. Let's start with the obvious issue, the federal government shutdown that ended last week when Congress finally passed bills to fund the government and raise the federal debt ceiling. And as you know, the reopening and the raising came with no strings attached. The original House Republican demand to defund the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, did not appear in the final legislation. But the bills did contain a pair of time bombs, in a sense. The funding of the government will only last until the middle of January, and the debt ceiling will probably be reached again by February 7th. Everybody, it seems, with a keyboard or microphone is offering analysis, often in terms of who won or lost in the government shutdown. Let's move on to what we do with what just happened. Did we learn anything from the 16 days of government shutdown and the days leading up to them? Did the right people learn the right lessons? And do you think it will happen again? Or do you believe the people who say, nope, there's no education in the second kick of a mule? This is Mitch McConnell's line, Senator Mitch McConnell's line. Will they have learned enough to prevent this from happening one more time? Or would it be a good thing if it did? Join us on the exchange on Vents Day, 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Topic two, voter registration, grows out of our talk last week about a move to give Oregon something like California's top two primary system. The major frustration for many voters is that the traditional closed primaries, which Oregon still holds, only allow voters registered with a party to choose the candidates of that party. And as of last November's election, independent or non-affiliated voters made up close to 30% of Oregon's electorate. So that percentage of people can't vote for the candidates from the parties who will end up in the general elections in which the independents do vote. Even if you're not especially attached to either party, you could just flip a coin and pick one to join just for the primaries. So just in general terms, and this goes for folks in either state, California has the top two primary and independents can vote in those. In general terms, though, why do you or don't you register with or without political party affiliation? And you don't need to tell us which party, but what do you get from aligning with one or get from not calling one of them your party? So what do you get from your voter registration choice or your choice not to join a party? Or what do you think the lessons were learned from the federal government shutdown? This is Super Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Tony, who now calls himself Peripatetic Tony because he's sometimes Tony in Talent and sometimes Tony in Ashland, got the first email in. He writes, "The so-called shutdown deserves applause from us all. I am inspired. It demonstrated the sheer genius of the polity of the United States. With concealed but effective bipartisan consensus, the president and congressman succeeded in the ultimate patriotic act, shutting down much of the counterproductive elements of government. It was never really a shutdown, but more of a slim down by a mere 15%. Slim down is the term that Fox News used as well. I think Tony's aware of that. Tony continues, "I am sure it could have been more than 15%, but we have to start somewhere. In general, the U.S. government was reduced to a level it should have been all along. Apart from the apocalyptic rants of poorly informed journalists, life went on as normal. Democrats generously credited the Republicans, and Republicans credited the Democrats. This was a truly impressive accomplishment. The framers of the U.S. Constitution deserve much of the credit. The Westminster model would never have been so swift and effective in such circumstances. In Britain, Canada, India, or Australia, no such slim down could have been so easily obtained. Though the exercise was prematurely stopped," Tony writes, "it would be a mistake to believe an important lesson has not been learned. We now know that much of the government is superfluous to needs, and we can assiduously work toward shrinking the behemoth over the coming years without fear of any consequences. Even the closing down of monuments and parks was a useful exercise, since it inspired the thinking citizenry to question why on earth such national treasures are entrusted to government rather than to competent private hands. Anyone who's ever had the opportunity to visit the magnificently maintained George Washington estate and home at Mount Vernon, Virginia, can see for themselves how this should and can be done. Mount Vernon did not shut down because it requires no government funding. It is owned and maintained in trust by the Mount Vernon Ladies Association and has been open every day for over 200 years. Needless to say, unlike World War II memorials, it remained open for all comers. This is Tony in Talent expressing himself on the government shutdown and what was learned here on the Jefferson Exchange in an email. The email lines are open. The phone lines are open at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782. Or jx@jeffnet.org. Tony concludes, the federal government should lease our national parks for a token fee to both nonprofit and profit-making organizations that can demonstrate a capability to manage environmentally and historically sensitive areas. This would be a win for taxpayers and tourists alike. This is, after all, the way the British National Trust operates, and they administer on a pro rata basis many more monuments, national parks, etc., than do the USA without any subsidy from British taxpayers. And he gives an address, nationaltrust.org. Tony concludes, who knows, perhaps this might even inspire public broadcasting to one day think about doing the honorable thing and wean themselves off the public teat. Well, I guess we were asking for that, to have our pledge drive and questions about lessons from the shutdown going on at the same time. What do you think, though? What did anybody learn from the shutdown? What were the lessons to be learned? Did anybody get them? 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, email jx@jeffnet.org, our other Vents Day topic, why you registered as an independent or with a party, what you get from your party affiliation. Here's Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Exchange on Vents Day.
Yes, good morning. That was kind of an observation that I've wondered how many people noticed. Did they notice that the mail kept coming through and public radio kept broadcasting? The reason being that they weren't totally dependent on government money. Now, should we start privatizing, you know, gradually a lot more things so there's a workable partnership? Example, school buses are primarily, at least around here, are Ludlow and different private things. They're not totally dependent on, you know, like county employees operating them, so they are more available for special uses on weekends, trips, and such.
Well, you know, that has been discussed a lot at several levels of government. And I mean, you notice that, for example, you live in Josephine County where the libraries are run by a nonprofit on a model similar to JPR, actually. In Jackson County, though, basically there's a lump sum paid to LSSI to run the libraries for the county. But those people work for LSSI and not for the county. And so the partnerships certainly exist. But at what point do you want to stop those, Jim? I mean, do you want to have your missile command done in a public-private partnership?
You really want to go there?
Actually,
let's be blunt about it. With the military and all these private contractors that we hear so much about, the Blackwater organizations and everything, aren't we going that way?
Well, there is a lot of private contractor work going on, right, in the theaters in both Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere in the world as well.
Turning over the supplying the space thingy bob up in the air, the whole, stop and think about it, take a deep breath. There is an awful lot of it that's gradually being privatized.
All right. Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Is Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange. We're taking your calls on lessons learned from the federal government shutdown. Our other topic is party registration. When you registered to vote, which party are you choosing? Well, we don't need to know which party you're choosing, but what benefit do you get from either registering with a party or registering independent? Because as we've talked about, obviously in California, the situation's been remedied just a bit because California has the top two primary system now where it doesn't matter what party you're in. Everybody votes in the primary, with some exceptions, presidential being one of them. But in Oregon, there's still the old closed primary system where you have to be a registered Republican to vote in a Republican primary, have to be a registered Democrat to vote in a Democratic primary. Independents don't get into either of those. What do you get from your choice in voter registration? What peace of mind or other satisfaction do you get from either belonging to a political party, and you don't need to tell us which one, or not? These are the questions before us on Vents Day. Lessons learned from the shutdown and why you registered as an independent or why with the party. So the phone numbers again on Vents Day, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. We'll take a quick break here and return to Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. This is Vents Day, our regular weekly chance for you to vent your spleen politely on topics in the news. Our topics this week: lessons from the federal government shutdown and why you registered independent or with a party, what you get from your voter registration choice in terms of affiliation. Our phone number is on the Exchange on Vents Day, 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Might want to hit the emails a little heavier with the fund drive going on. We have phone lines scattered in a bunch of different directions and apparently some issues with those. But please try the phone lines and then try the email box at jx@jeffnet.org. Mike in Eagle Point, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
Good morning.
Hi.
I am a non-affiliated voter as a matter of conscience because, number one, I don't believe that any political party has a monopoly on truth and wisdom in public policy. And number two, I think that the primary system is a misuse of government resources. Political parties are private entities, private clubs, essentially. And I think it's a misuse of the government apparatus for them to exclusively use the public voting process to pick their candidates.
It is an interesting thing to observe now. It's one of those things that's been around for so long, we kind of take it for granted. But when you drop back and provide the analysis like you just gave, Mike, it makes you think, now, wait a second, we're letting the parties use the government money because it's our county clerk's office who have to pay for these elections. And yet, two-thirds of the people registered don't get to vote in that party.
Yes, I'm a duly registered a voter and a taxpaying resident of the state of Oregon, and yet I'm denied access to the primary process unless I choose to join what is essentially a private club.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Mike. Appreciate that. This is Vents Day on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about why you registered as an independent or with a party, what you get from your voter registration, your affiliation choice. That is one of the topics on Vents Day. The other one is lessons from the federal government shutdown. What did members of Congress or anybody else learn from the shutdown that they should have? Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. When I was looking for strains of thought on political party affiliation, and again, this got started in large part because we had Mark Frohnmayer on the Exchange the end of last week to talk about his idea for approval voting primaries in Oregon, where you would write down on the ballot or pick on the ballot, no matter who the people, something like California's top two system where all the people running in the primaries are in one tank, and you would pick who you think are the best two candidates. And so there would be a – you get to vote for more than one, in essence, and the people who get the greatest number of votes out of that tank end up the ones who go on to the general election. But it raised the question again about the system that is currently in place in Oregon and existed until last year in California, which was that you have a system where 30-40% of the electorate is declining to state as either a Republican or Democratic party member, and so don't get to vote in those primaries. Oregon still has that system for the moment and will for at least the next election cycle. So the question is what you get out of your party affiliation choice or lack of party affiliation choice. Let us know your thoughts on this on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Exchange on Vents Day.
First off, I'd like to vent on the fact that I've three times called the 800 number and got sent to the pledge line.
Really?
Yeah, let you know that's going on.
All right, we had been aware.
And
I guess that's
so
problem.
I called the 541 number finally and got through to you.
All right.
The top two primary system in California is merely a way to make certain that no one but Republicans and Democrats get on the general election ballot. It destroys third-party chances. That's what it's about.
Oh, because they won't be running in the general election?
No, they're not allowed to.
Well, I mean,
the top two candidates get to be on the general election ballot.
Right. So what I'm saying, all right, so they wouldn't be in the general, but they are in the primary.
Big deal. Doesn't mean anything.
Why not?
Because it's only the primary. Third-party candidates have no chance to be the top two.
Do they? You saying that they don't stand a chance in the primary because there are that many more candidates between the two major parties? Is it just
I'm saying that the two major parties manipulate everything so that they're the only parties that can possibly be in the general election. That's what the top two primary is about.
I get what you're saying. What I'm not understanding is why you think it will always happen that way. Because the
fact
is, they
always
stand...
happen. The Republicans and Democrats have not controlled the political system of this country for over 150 years because they're nice people.
Well, politics ain't beanbag, as has been said before. Mark.
Yes, I know.
All right, thanks.
And that's what I'm trying to point out, is that these people deny everybody else the possibility of being on the general ballot. I vote blank ballots in November. Whenever there's only a Republican or a Democrat on the ballot, I vote a blank ballot. I refuse to vote for them. I'm tired of them.
All right, so what system would have been better than the top two primary, do you think?
I think that having any party that can make it together, get it together to be in the general election should be able to have a candidate. In California, if you have 5% of the general election vote in a presidential election year, you can be a party, and then until the top two primary came along, you'd be on the general election ballot. But you can't do that now. The only party the only third party candidates can be on the ballot now, as far as I know, in California, in the general election, are the presidential candidates.
Mm-hmm. But in any other race,
the rest of the elections, you can have only two candidates in the general election. And of course, the vast majority of voters are either Republicans or Democrats. And so all we get are Republicans and Democrats on the ballot in November.
Yeah, but in theory, again, I mean, if you have a Green Party or Pacific Green or American Independent, any one of the other parties that are on the ballots generally in California, if they can just get second-rate support in the primary, they end up in the general election.
Right. That's quite true. There was a Green Party candidate who ran against Nancy Pelosi in the last election and came in third out of five, which was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But he could have been on the general ballot under the previous system. He would have been on the general ballot under the previous system.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it. This is Vince Day on the Jefferson Exchange. We're taking your calls on political party affiliations, when you register to vote, and what you get from those. Obviously, in Oregon's system, which is still the closed primary system, you can only vote in the Republican primary if you're a member of the Republican Party. California's got the top two system, and you just heard Mark's issues with that. Our other topic on this Vents Day, lessons from the federal government shutdown, what anybody should have or did learn. 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, email jx@jeffnet.org. I ran across a piece in the Oregonian from a couple of days ago by a fellow by the name of Vaughn Davis Bournet, who attended the Dorchester meeting of the Republican Party for three decades. Got a PhD in history from Stanford, and his point is that Oregon needs strong political parties and not more non-affiliated voters, which is an interesting point. But he says that the political parties grow more rigid, partisan, and allergic to compromise. Far too many Oregonians are registering as non-affiliated or not registering at all. I deplore this, he writes. At one time, each party had its own liberal-leaning and conservative-leaning members who strove to control party direction and doctrine. This is as it should be. But to be like that, dissident voices must be welcome within each of our major parties. People have to stop being so intransigent, so stubborn, so unyielding, and so unbending. Moderation's the word. Mr. Bournet writes, those who register Republican or Democrat will be selecting the finalists in the primaries without them. Thank you very much. State and county committees of those parties will be drafting resolutions and issuing opinions on ballot measures without their input. Members of those committees will be chosen by others. Any informal polling of members by the party committees will skip them. He writes, belonging to a political party means attending party meetings, writing office holders of your party, supporting or opposing candidates, sharing in the cost of administering party affairs, and occasionally writing one's views on issues. The party, in quotes, can be pulled to the left or the right. While that is going on, the disenfranchised, non-affiliated voter at primary time can only complain from the outside. My advice to young people who are new to American politics is that they pick one of the two parties and participate fully with it. Join the Young Democrats or Republicans. Meet the candidates face-to-face. Donate even tiny amounts to the party organization of one's choice. Make the effort to locate the precinct machinery and interact a little with it. Choose either party. When unhappy for quite a while, force yourself to drop out and join the other one. Among the advice that Vaughn Davis Bornet wrote in The Oregonian earlier this week. What do you think? Why did you register either as an independent or with a party? And you don't need to tell us which party. What did you think you would gain? What were the benefits in your own mind for that choice and affiliation when you registered to vote? Or talk about the large national topic of lessons we should have and did or did not learn from the federal government shutdown. Here's Helga in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange on Vents Day.
I want to talk about the shutdown from a North Florida country road perspective.
All right.
Where I just came back from. There was a big marquee in front of a church on the road that said, "No shutdown in heaven." That's
It. No shutdown in heaven.
In heaven. No shutdown in heaven.
And how did you interpret that?
That doesn't matter, really. I really wanted to stop and photograph it. It was pretty priceless.
All right. No shutdown in heaven. Thank you for that, Helga. Good to talk to you. Our phone lines are open for you. We might be having a little trouble with the 800 number. I'll give it anyway. 800-838-3760. Anywhere in the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Doyle McManus wrote a piece in the LA Times this week about lessons to go around in the shutdown. Talks about President Obama saying politely on Thursday morning, "There are no winners here," Doyle McManus writes, but the president's aides and his allies in Congress don't really believe that, at least not in a practical political sense. They think the lesson of the crisis was straightforward. Toughness works. When Obama negotiated with House Speaker John Boehner, he lost in 2011. The debt ceiling was raised, but Obama lost both on the substance of the issue and in the eyes of many voters. This time, when Obama dug in his heels and refused to negotiate over the debt ceiling, he won. A White House aide told Doyle McManus, "Our goal was to prove to them that we were not going to engage with a gun pointed at our head. That's accomplished." Doyle McManus goes on, "That doesn't mean Obama won't negotiate with Republicans in the next round. Saying he wouldn't negotiate during the shutdown was only a tactic. It wasn't a basic principle," the White House aide noted. In the next round, Democrats hope to be negotiating from a better starting position. They believe Obama has shown he won't be pushed around. And they are also hopeful that Republicans got the message they can't use the debt ceiling as leverage anymore. That White House aide said it's kryptonite. They won't want to touch it. In addition, next year's scheduled sequester cuts will slash defense spending more than this year's, a fact that might spur Republican hawks toward a deal Democrats want to soften both defense and domestic spending cuts. And what did Republicans learn? To Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the Senate Republican leader who negotiated the stopgap deal, the lesson was that government shutdowns end badly for Republicans, and he doesn't want to try another one. "There's no education in the second kick of a mule," McConnell told the conservative magazine National Review last week. "The first kick of the mule was in 1995. The second one was the last 16 days. A government shutdown is off the table. We're not going to do it." Well, we shall see. As Doyle McManus concludes in his LA Times column, does that mean every Republican in Congress has sworn off trying to use the debt ceiling as leverage? Not necessarily. To some of the Tea Party members of Congress who spearheaded the doomed strategy to demand an end to Obama's health care law as the price of keeping the government open, the lesson was that their own party wasn't tough enough. This issue of toughness and John Wayne-style showdowns, we'll have to look in a couple of months and see if that happens again when, of course, the government funding will expire, the middle of January, and the debt ceiling ought to arrive again about the 7th of February is the projection I've seen. Lessons learned from the shutdown. Let's go to John in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking lessons from the shutdown and why you registered as an independent or not. Hi, John.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Hi.
My sad story is that I was a registered independent for many years, and I finally got sick of not being able to vote in anything but the main elections, because you're not allowed to vote unless you're Republican or Democrat. So I had to join one of the big two.
Well, you know, that raises a question then, too, because as we noted, the figure in Oregon's around 30% people not registering with either of the two major parties. And I wonder how many people are like you who are sort of holding their noses and picking a party anyway, just so they get to participate in the primaries.
Yeah, exactly. And I really think is an undemocratic process, because my voice would be an independent. I don't pick necessarily party. I pick candidate. If I think the guy's going to do the best job, I'll hold my nose and vote for X. But not to have that choice at the beginning of the process puts a lot of people out of, you know, out of their ability to vote.
They really do. All right. Thanks for that, John. Good to talk to you. This is Vince Day on the Jefferson Exchange. We could take a couple more calls on why you registered independent or with a political party, what you get from your affiliation choice, and lessons from the federal government shutdown. Phone numbers again, 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, email jx@jeffnet.org. See the Register Guard editorial from last week about the federal government shutdown. The Register Guard in Eugene says it was the Senate, where the Tea Party caucus does not hold the balance of power, that came through. The deal to fund the government through January 15th and raise the debt ceiling through February 7th came out of the Senate. A bipartisan group will discuss long-term changes in tax and spending policies. As for Obamacare, processes for verifying the eligibility of people receiving insurance subsidies will be tightened. And that's it. To gain this small-bore agreement, hundreds of thousands of Americans spent 16 days off their jobs. The United States credit rating was placed on a watch list by one of the leading bond rating agencies. And Americans endured the indignity of being lectured about financial rectitude by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. China pointed to the possibility of default as evidence for the need of a de-Americanized world. October has not been Congress's best month. The Register Guard goes on. One bitter irony is that Obama would be willing to discuss substantive changes in the health care reform law as its implementation moves forward. Problems arise that need fixing. Critics of Obamacare could have achieved more with a constructive approach. Opportunities for improvements can still be found as long as the aim is to make Obamacare work rather than ensure that it fails. The political cost to the House GOP has one benefit. It offers insurance against the possibility of a similar showdown early next year. That's the only consolation to be drawn from this painful episode. That the editorial from the Register Guard in Eugene. Well, it still remains to be seen whether we'll just do it all again the same way. Final call for Vince Day this Wednesday. Here's Charlie in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning. Yes, hi. Reason I am an independent, even though, like I said, like people have commented, one doesn't get to vote and for most of the folks out there, so I always either do a write-in or vote for myself. I try to follow George Washington's advice in his farewell address, where he warned specifically against the formation of parties and what that would lead to. These were classically educated men. They knew specifically the dangers of parties, as evidenced by what had happened in Rome and in the Byzantine Empire with the blues and the greens. I would recommend that anybody look that up to see what had happened, where parties became so in control that it led to riots and murder and mayhem and all sorts of things. So the blues and the greens and the Byzantines. Now, for lessons learned from the shutdown, what I took away from that was on a recent trip to San Francisco, I noticed that Alcatraz is primarily unused. What a perfect place to hold Congress. You ship them all out to Alcatraz. You lock them all up. They have to get something done. Until they get something done, they don't leave the island. And that's, you know, or unless they get voted off the island, in which case then that's a whole different matter. Anyway, so I think Alcatraz could be put to very useful use for conducting business. And as far as the whole problem with the gerrymandering and the rest of all the safe districts and how there's hardly any choice, really, what do you think we've got computers for? We know that we need to represent about 650,000 people. You just start at the northwest corner of each state, and you draw squares that represent, count 650,000 people. That becomes a representative district. After each census, you just change those squares to accommodate that. This way, then, we don't get into this whole thing, well, we're going to draw this district boundary in order to, you know, include all of the, you know, the left-leaning anti-plastic bag people in this district. And over here, we're going to have all of the meat-eating gun owners. So, you know, anyway, those are just my suggestions and what I have learned from all of this.
All right, Charlie, thanks for that, especially the reminder about George Washington warning us against faction as he left office in 1797. We have a final email here from John in Ashland. He says, it's been interesting watching the internal dynamics of the GOP. Initially, the oligarchs, Wall Street, executives of large corporations, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, thought they could make use of the Tea Party to accomplish goals they jointly were in favor of, defunding the Affordable Care Act, loosening government regulation or interference in business affairs, reducing entitlements such as Medicare and Social Security, and so on. However, when it became apparent that the members of the so-called rabid right were prepared to close the government, scuttle the U.S. economy and its future credit, panic set in and the oligarchs realized they had bet on the wrong horse. Capitulation to moderation, reason, and the law turned out to be the only way in the end to protect their private empires, and capitulate these lions of capitalism did to the disgust of Tea Party ideologues. Now the question is whether these odd bedfellows will ever trust each other again. That from John in Ashland. John, thanks. Thanks to everybody for taking part in Vents Day here on the Jefferson Exchange.